Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We explore the wonderful world of percussion in part one of today's program. In part two, we speak with a violist with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Stay with us. And that spectacular music is courtesy of the Third Coast Percussion. And Third Coast Percussion are very, very special guests of Carthage College's music department for the next couple of days. As a matter of fact, last night was the first of their performances on the campus of Carthage. They're giving a public masterclass tonight. And then tomorrow night, Friday night, 7:30 p.m., what promises to be a spectacular celebration of all things percussion, a concert that will feature not only Third Coast Percussion, but also Carthage's wind orchestra and percussion ensemble. And one of the people busiest Friday night, in addition to our four special guests, is Michael Kazakis, who is the percussion instructor here at Carthage and a very busy percussionist down in the Chicago area. He is kept busy by small little ensembles like the Chicago Symphony and the Lyric Opera of Chicago and all kinds of other places as well. And Carthage is lucky to have him. And I know that he is especially excited about these guests that have come to Carthage. So we'll welcome them in just a moment. But first, Michael Kazakis, just say a word about just how important Third Coast Percussion is.
They're one of the premier percussion ensembles out there today, and I'm really excited to host them at Carthage, and just their precision and artistry, and just a great bunch of guys, too. I've had the privilege of knowing many of them from when they first started out, and it's been great to see them grow as a group and just get better and better, so we're excited to have them up here.
So how small is the world of percussion? I mean, is it inevitable that you would know these four guys?
Maybe. You know, all my students do typically say, man, how do you know that person? How do you know that person? It's just, it is a small world. The music industry in general, not even just percussion, is a small world. And there aren't that many percussion groups out there, quartets like this. It really kind of evolved. Probably the people who pioneered this would have been groups like Nexus Percussion and Black Earth and Cincinnati Percussion Group. Those are the three kind of that really pioneered this as a medium, and then it has evolved into Third Coast Percussion and a couple other groups that exist, but there really aren't many, and these guys are at the top of their game.
Well, we feel lucky to have them, so we want to introduce all four of them to you. David Skidmore, their executive director, Robert Dillon, their development director, Peter Martin, their financial director, Sean Connors, their technical director, but I'm sure much more important to all of them is they're all percussionists and love what they do and, of course, create spectacular music together. So, gentlemen, a warm welcome to all four of you to the morning show and to Carthage.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good to have you here. I am not a percussionist, but in my childhood, I grew up in a college town, and I would get dropped off to all kinds of concerts. I had an insatiable hunger for them, but even though I'm a singer and a voice teacher, what I loved the most were the band concerts, and I would sit in the front row all by myself, and I would sit right by the percussion section and just watch the spectacle and listen to the amazing things. And I always thought, this is what I'm going to do someday, and never even thought about it when it came time to actually choose what to do. So, but every time I see percussionists in action, I just feel this enormous envy for the exciting stuff that you get to do. I'd love to hear from each of you how you each chose percussion as your musical focus, and also curious if any of you had other musical avenues that you also explored before percussion kind of finally won the day. David Skidmore.
Well, I started playing piano when I was about 7. That was my first instrument, and you know, you get to middle school band and you pick an instrument. I actually picked the trumpet. I played it for a year, but I spent the whole year not practicing trumpet and just looking over the percussion section and wishing I was playing that. So the next year I did that. Yeah, and then spent a lot of money and a lot of years studying percussion, and now we all get to do it for a living.
Wow, it's worked out pretty well for you. Robert?
Yeah. So I have two older brothers, and they both played saxophone through elementary, middle, high school, and into college a little bit. And so when it was time for me to pick an instrument for my elementary school band program, I decided I did not want to play the saxophone, so I wanted to be different. And drums seemed pretty cool. I was 9 years old, and like a lot of nine-year-olds, I thought, drums are cool. And that was kind of the beginning. So it all went wrong. No, but it was great. And then, you know, kept through it through school band program. And then in high school, a friend of mine encouraged me to join local youth orchestras in the Detroit area where I grew up. And so I spent my Saturdays playing the Metropolitan Youth Symphony and Detroit Symphony Civic Orchestra. And sort of the process of that really fell in love with just spending my time playing music and fell in love with the classical music world.
Very good. Peter Martin.
Yeah, I started playing the piano at age 4. And like some of these other guys, I tinkered with a couple other instruments growing up. But right around middle school, I picked up drums. I started first as a playing drum set, just playing rock and roll drum set. Through drum set, I fell in love with jazz. And through jazz, I discovered some other instruments of percussion, including the vibraphone. And once I discovered the vibraphone, I started realizing there's like, you know, an entire world of percussion instruments out there. And it really got me excited and interested. And that got me really interested in making, you know, the larger field of percussion, you know, my career. Excellent. That's where I'm at now.
Finally, Sean. Sean Connors.
So similar to Peter and all these guys, one of the best things about being in this group is we're all kind of musical omnivores. We all love a really wide variety of music. And I started with piano as well, but when it came time in band to choose instruments, I just wanted to play an instrument that could be in as many possible ensembles or musical scenarios as I possibly could be. So I started making tallies, and every group that I saw, even choirs, if there was one instrument, it would be some sort of percussion thing. It was a piano or maybe some drums, but I really wanted to play in the jazz band. I really wanted to play in an orchestra. I really wanted to be in a rock band. I really wanted to be in the concert band. We really wanted to play in pits for musicals, and percussion is capable of doing all of that and more, so that's why I became one.
So it's the perfect thing for a workaholic, a musical workaholic.
That's right.
Although I suspect, I was thinking about this after seeing Carthage's percussion ensemble's last concert, which was just amazing. And I remember as I watched these, mostly young men, but there's at least one young woman in the group this year too, just realizing that, for instance, when you go to a band concert, everybody else, even if you know they're having fun, looks like they're working as they sit in their chairs in front of their stands. And there's something maybe about just the physicality of percussionists running from instrument to instrument. It looks like you're playing in the sense of playing games or playing around versus working hard at making music. Does it feel like that to you to some extent, or is that kind of an illusion, and is it more work than it maybe appears?
Certainly plenty of work, but it is something that's really enjoyable, and I think when we remember to think about how much fun we're having and not being afraid to share it, then I think it's very natural to, you know, it's hard to play drums without smiling, but, you know, but there's a lot of coordination and a lot of things to figure out in order to make it as fun as possible. You know, I think it can be a very stressful thing when you're trying to coordinate getting around a big setup of instruments or getting from instrument to instrument, all these different things. But sort of the right amount of advanced planning and practicing all of those aspects of the performance as much as you practice, just the notes you have to play and all that stuff, lets the final experience feel really fun. Hmm.
You all, I assume, play just about everything. So how do you decide who's going to play what on a given piece? How do those kind of decisions get made?
Well, we, you know, when we get a new piece and we look at the score and the different parts, occasionally one person will say, oh, I'd really like to play that part. I feel like playing vibraphone for a while, or I feel like playing drum set for a while, or whatever it might be. But actually, I'd say more often than not, we all look at all the parts and say, oh, any of those would be good. So there's an extraordinary number of pieces that we play where we just do it alphabetically. So Sean's percussion 1, Rob's percussion 2, Pete's percussion 3, I'm percussion 4. And it really is in a percussion quartet, unlike a string quartet, especially early string quartets, there's maybe somewhat of a hierarchy. First violin is leading and playing the melody most of the time, etc. That's just really not the case for a lot of percussion quartet music. So the numbers become a little bit arbitrary. So we have a lot of things that we need to decide, and so we take that decision a little bit off the table.
Right. When you're playing a piece, generally speaking, through the course of that piece, are you playing one single instrument, or are you flying among several? And is that laid out in the score, that percussionist number one plays these three or four different instruments through the course of the piece? Or does that vary piece to piece?
Yeah, it definitely varies from piece to piece. And, you know, well, the concert that we played last night, there was a lot of sort of fixed stations that we had. There was a lot of keyboard repertoire where, you know, I would just be playing marimba, and Sean would just be playing a vibraphone. You know, for this concert that we're playing tomorrow night, we're playing this piece, Radiant Child, by the composer David T. Little. We all are at a fixed station. We're not necessarily running from place to place, but in each of our stations, we have a variety of different instruments. So, you know, Sean has not only a glockenspiel, but he also has a bass drum and a bunch of toms and a triangle and a cymbal. And this happens all the time in percussion. And what the composers generally do is, you know, at the very beginning of the piece, or at the top left corner of our sheet music, there's a little key that says, here's all the instruments that you have to play throughout the course of this piece, and here's a, sort of a map or a key for where they're laid out on a staff. So, you know, the top line of a staff might mean a woodblock, and the bottom line might be a bass drum, you know, and that stays like that for the remainder of the piece. You know, one of the challenges of being a percussionist is that because each piece that we play is, you know, a different set of instruments, so we're learning a completely new clef, or a new percussion clef, you know. So there's always a sort of steep learning curve in the beginning as you're kind of trying to get comfortable with how the composer has laid everything out on a staff for you. Yeah.
Is just about everything you play originally conceived for you or for a percussion ensemble versus playing a percussion arrangement of Toccata and Fugue in D minor or something like that? I mean, do you even bother with that kind of thing anymore?
We do a lot of commissioning, and there's, you know, repertoire out there that was written for percussion groups before us, but it's very rare that we play arrangements. Every once in a while there's something that works really well and I think maybe lends itself to a new type of creativity, but I think we're particularly interested in helping to create and champion repertoire that's, you know, created specifically with all the sort of advantages and challenges of a percussion group and takes advantage of that in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Does everything you play always include, what do we call them, mallet instruments? Mm-hmm. I mean, like xylophones and vibraphones and so on, where there is actual tonal pitches in the sense of we can really hear the pitches and a melody can really be played versus something if it's all woodblocks and claves and whatever. I mean, you're not going to be able to create a melody, at least in the same way. Do you do both?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of repertoire that we play, you know, does feature keyboards, and the concert that we'll be doing on Friday night definitely features the keyboard instruments. But, you know, one of the pieces that we played last night was a piece called Table Music, which was just three people playing actually the top of a table. So there is no pitch, you know, involved at all. And actually that piece is all about the sounds that you can get from rapping on the table with your knuckles or your fingertips or swiping it with the palm of your hand. And so, you know, we talk about this a lot, and you know, one of the great things about being a percussionist is just the sort of diversity that we have in our instrument collection. You know, I mean, there are really just thousands and thousands of percussion instruments out there. I mean, there's sort of standard Western classical instruments like timpani and xylophone and drum set, but, you know, every culture, or most every culture from every continent and any country from, you know, all over the world, you know, has their own unique percussion tradition, you know, so we oftentimes are reappropriating like those instruments and incorporating them into our own repertoire. And then, you know, percussionists, we're really anything can become a percussion instrument. If it's a table, I can, you know, make sound out of it with my hands or hitting it with sticks and mallets, and that becomes a percussion instrument. You know, so we generally are pretty open musicians in that we're able, but also really excited to try anything out musically.
You each have different roles besides the musical roles you play, and I kind of listed them off: executive director, development director, financial director. Those all make sense. Sean Connors, what does the technical director do? I hope it's not as dirty and grimy as that term might possibly mean or implies.
No, it's so we are somewhat of a unique ensemble as a percussion ensemble because every concert includes a different battery of instruments. And unlike a saxophone quartet who can show up with their saxophones from gig to gig, we have to reinvent what our truckload of gear is going to be. So that's one of my main challenges, but also making lists of everything that could possibly go wrong with the logistics involved with putting on percussion ensemble concerts. And we all help each other out. So, you know, for example, Rob is our development director, but he can delegate to other people in the ensemble. So, you know, when I'm making a stage plot or a technical writer to send to a host venue, I often get feedback and input from all the guys, and we make a group decision, and I'm just the one who picks up the phone.
Gotcha. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to the four men who comprise Third Coast Percussion. They are in residence at Carthage College right now. They're actually, if I remember correctly from your website, the ensemble in residence at Notre Dame.
That's right, yeah.
Is that how you began, or were you already together before that affiliation occurred?
We were together before that. The group has been around about 10 years. This is our 10th anniversary season. Mm. We played our first concert as Third Coast Percussion in June of 2005. And we became the ensemble in residence at University of Notre Dame relatively recently, in 2013. Mm. And we're in the middle of a five-year appointment there, which has been a lot of fun. We take a lot of the sort of passions of our group, and Notre Dame supports those things. So, for instance, they help us commission new work every year. So we're premiering one, two, sometimes three brand new pieces at Notre Dame every year that they're helping us to commission. We build performance projects there. Like the concert we played here in Carthage last night featured two pieces that were both commissioned for us by Notre Dame, but also were projects that we workshopped at Notre Dame, where we sort of did a lot of the work of kind of figuring out how the instruments would work for the piece and how the piece would flow, that sort of thing. So it's a really, really fun place to be, and they, like us, are curious about where music can go and also about connections that music can make with other fields, which is a sort of another big passion of ours.
How is it that this group formed, and was it with the four of you? Has it been the same four all the way?
Sean joined the group about 3 years ago.
Yeah,
feels like he's been here forever, which is awesome. We kind of can't imagine life before Sean.
It's very sweet.
Previously in the group, there was a wonderful percussionist named Clay Condon, who's the composer of one of the pieces we played last night.
Yeah.
He was with the group for many years when we got started, and all of us, the four of us at this table and Third Coast Percussion and Clay as well, we all went to school at Northwestern University in Evanston. So that's our initial tie to Chicago. And, of course, Northwestern has a really wonderful school of music there and a wonderful percussion program. And at the time we were there, there was, and there still is, there's a big focus on chamber music for percussion. So we kind of caught the bug there and became really passionate about this music and wanted to do it professionally, and that's what led to this group.
Before we finish, I want to make sure that you explain something that was kind of Greek to me as I read through your website. I mean, just because I'm kind of a caveman when it comes to such things. This matter of apps and so on that you apparently have sort of created to give at least certain audience members who understand this kind of thing a way to kind of access and even collaborate with you on a whole different level. What is that all about?
So we've released three mobile apps so far. The newest one just came out very recently, and it is sort of a partner app to an album we just put out of the music by the American composer Steve Reich, who's celebrating his 80th birthday this year. So we put out this whole album of Reich's percussion works. But then We also released this app, which is currently available on iPhone and iPad, and will soon be available on Android as well. And it gives the users an opportunity to explore some of Reich's compositional ideas a little more in depth and in a very sort of hands-on way, and then to use those ideas to create their own musical content. And so this is a great, feels like a really great opportunity at this moment in history and just where technology has evolved to, that, you know, technology has been great for over the last 100 years or so to, like, get music, to share music with people all over the place. You can record something, and someone doesn't have to be there live in order for you to hear the music. But recordings have generally been a kind of one-way interaction. You know, someone records it, someone else listens to it, and there's no, you know, not as much control the listener, you know, can exert over the experience. But to actually get involved in the creative process is something that the these apps can open up. And so we sort of present these couple of different activities that each relate to a different compositional idea from Steve Reich's music. And then the user can sort of see how it's used in Reich's music and then use it to create their own sort of musical tidbits. So it's a lot of fun. And the previous apps we released were in relation to music by John Cage and by Augusta Reed Thomas, a wonderful composer we've commissioned and worked with who lives in Chicago. And again, kind of gives users a little bit of a hands-on entryway into understanding this music a little bit more.
Fantastic. And each of those apps are free, and you can find them on the iTunes store if you search Third Coast Percussion.
Very good. You're doing a masterclass tonight with some of Carthage's very talented young percussionists. And I'm reminded that I think I first started to really understand the intricacy of percussion when I watched Michael Kazakis work with a young percussionist who was auditioning to maybe come here to Carthage. And we needed a certain number of people, and I got grabbed from the basement to just come on up and listen to this guy play the snare drum, I think. And then Michael worked with him a little bit, and it was just so eye-opening to me because, I mean, in my ignorance, you just hit the snare drum with the stick, and that's all there is to it. And I mean, never imagined that there's any kind of nuance or subtlety involved in that. I wonder for any of you, when you first thought about going into percussion, did you not even understand just the sort of the complex world you were entering? I mean, did you assume it would be as simple as hitting something with a stick?
I don't know if I assumed it would be as simple as hitting something with a stick, but I definitely think we would all agree that our, like, the world of percussion has certainly opened up to us, like, since our first, you know, footsteps, you know, however that was. And some of us started playing bands, some of us started in other ways. So, you know, and yeah, so I think one of the really great things is yeah, just how nuanced all the percussion instruments, you know, can be, and how, you know, the more you learn a specific percussion instrument, and maybe it might even be a percussion instrument that's tied to a specific culture or a specific sort of musical aesthetic, the really fun thing then is being able to transfer those techniques and transfer those nuances of those instruments to some of the other percussion instruments as well. Mm. And I think that's something that it's sort of a skill set all of us have, you know, learned over the years, and, you know, you practice, you work hard at it, and hopefully someday you get to the point where you can do that. But it's a constantly a learning process, and we're constantly all, you know, learning new material. I started studying tabla, which is a North Indian percussion instrument, just about a month ago, and that's opened up a completely new world, you know, to me as well. And we've all of us have collectively been working on, you know, music from West African music, from the Ewe tradition. We've been working on Zimbabwean music, and realizing how nuanced these musical styles and the instruments that are associated with them are, and then hopefully be able to transfer all of that information into this art that we create together.
Makes it even more exciting.
Yeah.
Michael Kazakis, let's have you just run down all that's going to happen in this exciting concert Friday night.
Okay. Well, the concert's going to start at 7:30, and we're going to have the concert band, which is, we have two bands here at Carthage. And so the concert band will start playing pieces that they've worked on for the first half for about a half hour. And they're going to have guest conductors, which will be students. Mm. And then we'll have an intermission. And by the way, in that first half, we're going to have a percussionist solo on a piece called Rainbow Ripples, which is a rag with band accompaniment.
Wow.
And then after intermission, there'll be a percussion-heavy first half for the Wind Orchestra to play, which is the other band. And so I'm going to solo on a timpani concerto with the wind orchestra called Raise the Roof by Michael Dougherty, who teaches at the University of Michigan. And that's a kind of a tour de force piece for timpani with a lot of tuning changes, and it's kind of got a jazz and rock influence with it.
Wow.
Then the percussion ensemble is going to be featured. It's Carthage's percussion ensemble. We're going to play a piece called Catching Shadows by Ivan Trevino, which also has a rock influence. It's going to be a theme, I guess. And then Third Coast is going to come out, and we're going to do a piece called Radiant Child, which we've talked about earlier today. And it's a co-commission that Carthage is part of with a bunch of different institutions for a wind ensemble version of this piece. It's originally written for chamber orchestra. So they're going to solo, and I'm going to conduct the band in that piece. And then, just to kind of tie it all up, since we've had so many people involved, I thought it'd be fun to have Third Coast and myself play a piece. So we're going to do a quintet called Gravity by Mark Mellitz, who is a Chicago composer. It's one of my favorite pieces, so I kind of pushed and said, can we do that piece? And they were like, sure, let's do it.
So, it was easier than fighting you on it. They gave in. But we're glad.
We lost DC.
Well, we are just more excited than we can say about the opportunity to experience your artistry in person. Third Coast Percussion performs with Carthage's Wind Ensemble and their percussion ensemble tomorrow night, 7:30. And a reminder as well that you might want to take in the master class that is tonight, 7:30, and it's okay for the public to come, anyone who's interested. I mean, master classes are almost always interesting, and I'm sure this one will be. But otherwise, for sure, you want to put on your calendar tomorrow night's concert, 7:30 at Siebert Chapel. David Skidmore, Robert Dillon, Peter Martin, Sean Connors, they comprise Third Coast Percussion. Great to meet all of you, and welcome to Carthage and to southeastern Wisconsin. And Michael Kazakis, great to have you here as well.
Thank you so much.
I'm Gregory Berg.
Third Coast Percussion, and the piece Fractalia by Owen Clayton Condon. The time is 8:37. You're listening to the Music Potpourri on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. That beautiful music is of Mozart, and it is from his Sinfonia Concertante, probably the single most famous work ever composed for the violin and viola. And it's one of the pieces that is going to be performed by the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra on their next concert. I'm very excited to speak with one of the two soloists who will be part of that Mozart performance. His name is Li Kuo Cheng. He is the violist who will be performing the viola part of the Mozart. And in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking to the violinist who will be joining him in that performance. But Li Kuo Cheng is a violist with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And I know that the folks in Lake Geneva are very, very excited about the opportunity to have him and his colleague on their stage. Li Kuo Cheng, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to talk to you, Greg, and through you to the listeners in Lake Geneva area.
Can you give us, I'm afraid it needs to be a very quick summary, but a summary of where you come from originally and the path that eventually took you to the Midwest?
Yeah, I was born in China and grew up in Shanghai, so I consider Shanghai as my hometown. And my mother was one of the first generation of musicians studied abroad back in the 20s and 30s. She was a graduate from London's Royal Academy. She's a pianist. And then this is why from that family background, I started with piano there. Then when the great Russian Soviet violinist David Oistrakh went to Shanghai to give a recital, my mother brought me to that concert. After that, I insist I have to play violin. So I won and become a violinist. Entered the Shanghai Conservatory. The Shanghai Conservatory has a system starting from 9 years old, train the kids professionally, full-time, and then the music high school, and then to college. But unfortunately, my study was interrupted by 10 years chaotic, so-called Cultural Revolution, the political persecution, that terrible so-called movement. And but I was lucky because I was selected by Mao Zedong, then the leader's wife, to do some experiment work. So I still get to play violin, later on viola, and not like many of my colleagues, schoolmates, or even my mother, my sister, who's also musician, was sent to the farm for many years without touching the instrument.
Oh, yes. So you at least got to continue playing.
Exactly. And so that part was very lucky. Mm-hmm. So after this chaotic political movement ended in 1976, after Mao Zedong's death, China reopened the door and all the education resumed. But my generation missed the age of to enter college level. So I was lucky because of my mother's connections. I was one of the very first few music students came out on our own, not government sent out, and sponsored by the music schools here. For instance, Juilliard, New England Conservatory, Eastman School, they all offered a full scholarship for me. I came to the States in 1979 and as a private student, and I entered Eastman School, and they took care of everything, paid for my room, board, everything, and started my career in this country. In 1988, after my career started in Phoenix Symphony and the Denver Symphony, I was very lucky and won the position of assistant principal viola in Chicago Symphony Orchestra, appointed by Sir George Schottky. So that was my brief career.
Wow.
thank you. So I've been there in this position for almost 28 years now.
Just give us a sense of just some of the preeminent conductors under which you have had the great pleasure and privilege of playing.
Yes. Chicago Symphony unique in this world right now because ever since I can remember from the time I joined the orchestra in 1988 was Sir George Schottky, our music director. After that was Daniel Barenboim. After Daniel Barenboim in 2006, after he left, appointed Bernard Haitink and Pierre Boulez. After that, 4 years later, it was Riccardo Muti. I think any orchestra today in the world should envy this kind of lineage of all the great conductors. And in between, we have Claudio Abbado. When I joined, he was still at the end of his tenure as our principal guest conductor. Then many of the preeminent conductors, Zubin Mehta, Kurt Mazur, you name it, they all came through Chicago Symphony and treat Chicago Symphony as one of the important stage and relationship in their career. So if you check all our program, the history is full of the most important, preeminent conductors in today's world.
Hmm.
And so I feel very privileged and very, very fortunate to have this opportunity.
Yes. Say a word about this beautiful instrument, the viola, that sometimes is overshadowed by its brighter sibling, the violin. But there are many people, of course, who if anything, prefer the deep, rich sound of the viola. Tell us about your own relationship to this particular instrument.
Yes. The reason I became violist instead of violinist, because I was a violinist, I was trained as a violinist, is because I want to play chamber music. At that time, in the music high school in Shanghai Conservatory, we did not have viola major. Not until college level they start to have viola major. So this is why I was frustrated, could not find a good, suitable violist to form a quartet. I say, well, I'm going to do that. So I played both instruments at the same time. But gradually, I'm more interested in viola because the inner voice. And just like if you check the history of the music, and Mozart played the viola, and Beethoven played the viola, and Dvorak played viola, and Schumann, in his first very famous quotation is, if you want to really learn the compositional technique, you should know the second violin in viola, the voice in all the Beethoven quartet. That's the essence of this. And the Daniel Barenboim has said in the entire this Western symphonic the repertoire, viola play a very important role in all these repertoire. Whenever there's important harmonic change, always happened in viola first.
Hmm.
If you visit Mozart's birthplace in Salzburg, at this room, when they displayed his violin and his viola in the glass case, there was a music stand. There was a music, the only music, sitting there. Pages open. That was Symphony Concertante, the very first edition Symphony Concertante.
Wow.
Why they choose that one? Because viola was Mozart's very favorite instrument. And he himself played the world premiere of this piece with the concertmaster of the Archbishop Orchestra in Salzburg.
Mm.
He himself played the viola part.
Wow, so you are stepping into the footsteps of the great composer himself. That must be a very special thrill to play this music and know that Mozart himself played it at its first performance, in addition to writing it.
Exactly. If you ask any musician or musicologist, they always say, whenever there is a viola involved in music, Mozart's composition, suddenly the scoop of the depths of the music expression suddenly elevated to a new height. For instance, all his seven violin concertos are great music treasures, but none of them can compare with Symphony Concertante because he added the viola. All his string quartets are jewels in our repertoire. None of them can compare with these five quintets, the viola quintet. You know, these are considered huge achievement in the Western classical music.
This is why
I say that's his. He has special attachment to viola. Viola, if the viola comes, the voice, suddenly it's new inspiration comes.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, you're saying that the viola offered Mozart maybe a special source of inspiration and maybe inspired him to compose some of his very, very finest music.
I think so.
Hmm. What would you have people listen for, those who are going to be at this concert on Saturday night and hearing the Sinfonia Concertante, maybe for the first time in their lives? What would you suggest they maybe listen for in order to better appreciate the greatness of this piece?
Yeah, just like you say that in the beginning statement, viola is overshadowed because by the nature of the instrument. You know, viola is a wrong proportionate instrument. According to this register for viola's four strings, the body of the instrument should be double the size. Then the sonority, everything, the overtone, vibration will be scientifically correct. But nobody will be able to play it. Yes. In the early days, so-called string quartet is one violin, two viola, and one cello. So they, at the Stradivarius, that period of time, they have tenor viola and alto viola. That means one is much smaller in body and has the tone character closer to the violin. And the one is huge and has much deeper sound and closer to the cello. The later on, start from Haydn, gradually become two violins, one viola. So in that sense, viola is less virtuosic in a way because you cannot running around in this huge instrument. So in that sense, viola is very rare in the repertoire playing a solo or front row the character. However, in such an early time, because the genius of Mozart and himself familiarity with this viola instrument, you can listen to complete equal part between violin and viola. Lots of conversation. You play one phrase, I play another phrase. Violin play this, and in a slightly different fashion, viola repeated, vice versa. So that's one thing, and still today, nobody ever achieved. There's many people try to write another symphony concertante. None of them succeeded. It's very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, besides that, obviously the depth, the beauty of the piece. And the first movement in sheer size and the length is huge. And then it's like a symphonic music, you know. Then the second movement is one of the most beautiful slow movements of the Mozart repertoire, the conversation between the viola and violin. I encourage the listeners almost can relate it to opera. It's like two characters and a telling story, you know. This. And the third movement is such a happy, virtuosic movement, and interchange between the orchestra, the two solo parts, was just brilliantly written. So this is a very rewarding experience to any string players. If you check the list, you try to go to any website to listen, to see Mozart's concertos, whatever, you will see among the violin concertos, you will see the most tracks, most of the recordings is the Symphony Concertante. Yeah, and see how many people record this, because it's considered is a achievement for the concerto form for these two string instruments. Every musician want to play this piece because it's so rewarding.
Mm. A last question. You, of course, spend most of your time, most of your professional time, playing with the Chicago Symphony, one of the greatest symphonies in the world. With all due respect to the Lake Geneva Symphony, which is a marvelous group, it, of course, is not the Chicago Symphony. I wonder what it is like for you to step away from a group like the Chicago Symphony to make music in a very different place, in a much smaller community, with an orchestra with, in a sense, much more modest resources. I suspect that on a musical level, it's one kind of experience, but I suspect there are great pleasures that are involved for you that maybe are not a part of your life with the Chicago Symphony. Can you just say a word about that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because for me, in today's music, I feel, in some sense, Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra is more important than Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Why I say that? Because this is grassroots. This is where you train, you give the possibility of listening to this great classical music repertoire to every ordinary citizen, every possible person you can reach. We cannot do that. And so you need Chicago Symphony to like a beacon to have see, okay, look, for this great traditional repertoire, we can reach certain level like that. Yet it's more important for Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra to reach every day all these folks living wherever it is in this country or in the world, and they can have the access, easy access to this great repertoire, because live performance is not replaceable. No matter how advanced technology can be, which is very important, the technology can spread this great treasure of this classical music. However, the real experience, the human experience with you, with the music, has to be a live performance. This, only Lake Geneva Symphony can serve this part of the population, or somewhere else, the community, and they have this. So I always have a huge respect for these people who come here and with their free time and dedicated to the great music tradition. Not only themselves enjoyed, they spread this joy to their neighbors and all the people surround them. So every time I have this opportunity, I be inspired by the passion of dedication of these musicians. And also, and in the back, I felt very rewarding. I can give something and to carry over this tradition I learned from Chicago Symphony and to the people.
Hmm. Beautifully said. Lee Kuo Chang is a violist with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and will be one of the soloists in Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante being performed this Saturday evening by the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. Lee Kuo Chang, I so enjoyed this opportunity to speak with you. Thank you so much and very best wishes to you.
Thank you. Great pleasure for me as well.
You can call for more information about the concert at 262-359-9072 or go to lakegenevaorchestra.org. The time is exactly 8:59 here on WGTD HD. And support for The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for The Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, I look forward to reconnecting with a fine jazz musician, a string bass player, actually, Mike Goodbar, who has helped to coordinate yet another jazz program for the Fine Arts at First series at First United Methodist Church.